Chapter 20. The Party's Over. Courage is reckoned the greatest of all virtues, because unless a man has the virtue, he has no security for preserving any other. Samuel Johnson, another grammar school boy. On one of my stays with my grandparents in Dunfermline in Scotland, I was taken around to see my Uncle Davy and sat in the kitchen with a bunch of my granddad's relatives. They were bantering back and forth, relaxed in a manner that only veterans know. All of them had served our people in finishing off Hitler and Tojo, and I sat among them as a little reminder of why they fought. This tanned little lad with sun-bleached hair from my visit to my parents in Cyprus. I remember them looking at me and smiling, joking away affectionately. It is an image that still strikes a chord with me and makes me think about my generation's gratitude to our forebears. We used to walk around a land full of quiet heroes, and not those feeding high off the hog from some NGO, some charity with fancy PR departments, and the children of the elite employed to run them. In our day, charities were simple and close to the people. Today, it is an industry sector. Many great people work in that field, but the ones being paid millions and hundreds of thousands are simply taking the mickey. That's my opinion, though those out there risking their necks to deliver help in war-torn areas are heroes and deserving of our gratitude. But the fund guzzlers, not so much. The collapse in the credibility of the corrupted political class, their hangers-on in the churches, the charities, and the regulation-spouting departments have brought us to the current crisis. It is time that we, the people, took advantage of a crisis instead of leaving the parties to use them against us. We have one now, and we have the strategy, the plans, and the tools to make use of it. To end the dirty tricks and murderous operations of the anti-democratic forces looking to centralize power and to destroy our freedoms. A workable strategy has been laid out which involves all of us taking a full part in a hybrid system, the prime objective being to introduce the people's veto. This is the important first step to incorporating direct democracy as an integral part of our improved part representative, part direct system of government. This is not difficult. It requires a tweak here and a tap there, and is certainly easier to understand than those proportional representation formulae. All we need is the courage and the commitment to take on the tiny elite and their useful tools, our MPs. But this is easy, believe me. Tell them that you want the hybrid system, that you support the people's veto, and if their party is the only one that will adopt it, they are going to be getting your vote. Once the referendum option on every law is in place, the whole political landscape changes, and along with it, the economic and social ones. We take charge and they take orders. We can do this together, and future generations will thank us forever. But if not, their righteous curses will reach down to us in our graves. I believe that our target was set out for us over 1,000 years ago, that we must be free, that all of us must judge for ourselves how we should live, and that we should have the final decision on what trail we want to hike down to happiness. The path has been long, hard, and tortuous, but our predecessors dug deep, laid solid foundations, and now look down on us with anticipation as we approach the next great hurdle. And drawing near we are, closing in on their target and ours, and we owe much to our guide, the founder of the Anglo world, Alfred the Great, who set out in a few words the simple and decent means by which we can reach our goal. That we judge very evenly, do not judge one law to the rich, another to the poor, nor judge one law to your friend, another to your foe. These words call us to action, to a future in which we all play our part. So how does living in a hybrid democracy now compare to living as a bug eater under the globalists? The Swiss own their political culture and the solutions they arrive at. By omission or commission, the people's veto has formed their nation and is the reason for their success. Most importantly, the Swiss are courageous enough to stick to their guns and to defend the independence they have gained. They are happy with their lot, and despite being neutral and fighting in no wars, they still serve in their conscription-based military or alternative service choices to uphold and defend the laws they must abide by. The young can benefit from this voter-supported challenge and launchpad into adulthood, with society gaining team players with leadership, planning, and out-of-their-rut experience, all of which help ground a nation. And who runs the place? The free and equal citizens of a democracy that does what it says on the tin. There the people really do rule. To make clear how Britons do not, I will quote President Nixon from the 5th of December, 1971, on how the US shoved Britain into Europe. He was recorded on the White House phone talking to Henry Kissinger and griping that Britain had abstained from a UN vote concerning the independence struggle of Bangladesh from West Pakistan. Nixon moaned to Kissinger, "I am beginning to think that one of the worst mistakes we made was to push Britain onto the common market." Rhodes and other power-crazed types brought us the bloody 20th century, and look how their dreams worked out for us. Bloodlettings on unimaginable scales, terror without end, and the loss of one liberty after another. Enough of the fools who don't realize that we and they don't really know anything. Even if the brightest person on the planet could read every one of the 30-odd million books in the U.S. Library of Congress, could soak themselves in every profession, trade, and job that there is around the world, absorbed all tacit knowledge not found in media forms, studied enough to gain every one of the thousands of PhDs one can immerse oneself in, and had the life experience of every person on the planet, would they be wise? We cannot say. But our combined knowledge and experience obviously gets us a lot closer to that ideal than a few MPs and congressional types can. What do you think? You don't have to ask me. Over 30 years ago now, on one of the tests on one of my courses, we came to what appeared to be the end of the event. After many miles of running up and down hills and valleys whilst carrying a weighted stretcher, we came to an open field. At the far side of this flat patch was a line of trucks with their tailgates down, ready for us to clamber into. Of course, it wasn't going to be that simple and sure enough. When we lay our burdens down at the back of the vehicles, we were told to face the way from which we had come. Out came the order, "Right, on your bellies," and crawled back across the field. So the sickener began. Back and forth we went, crawling and dragging ourselves as best we could across the ground we had covered. At some point, my mind wandered, and I was looking down at myself from above, disembodied. However, what I most remember is what went through my head, and it was not defeat. I thought, I am never giving up. I may die, but I am not stopping. Not for this, not for anything. From that day to this, that thought has carried me. It's a curse, but one I accept. I have few resolutions in life, but seeing real democracy introduced into the land of my grandfather and his cousins is the one on which I focus, a resolution I carry with me until I achieve it or I pass. I know that there is no utopia, but I believe that we can build a better place where the people lead and live as they please, choosing their beliefs, stating them plainly, and criticizing those they wish to. It's worth everything that has been given by our forebears to get us this close, in gratitude for which I have done my best too. Thank you to those who stepped forward in the past, and to those who are doing so now. For them, for the great country I call home, I am eternally grateful, and my future lies among them. No matter how mad things seem, we should understand that they need not remain so. The point is that the process is reversible.